And a one, and a two, and welcome to the Tales from the Long Box podcast. This is episode 141, Spotlight on Warp Graphics, A Distant Soil, circa 1983, boys and girls. What was I doing in 1983? Anyway, I am Chris Mosby.
I am incredibly ancient, apparently, Caleb Gerard.
Oh, now. Not that old.
And I am Murray Fox. What was I doing? I was, like, graduating grade 8, maybe?
Yeah, I was 12. Yeah, 12. Yes.
All right. Gee whiz, I was in high school.
Maybe I was starting high school.
I was either a freshman or a sophomore in high school, depending on which. Well, it looks like it came out at the end of so.
Yeah. Wow.
83, I mean, excuse me. So that was. Mm-hmm. Let me see. Yeah. Would be solidly, I think, in my sophomore year of high school.
Whew.
Yeah, bite me.
No, I'm right there with. I'm not that much younger than you, man. I mean, older than you. Yeah, younger.
Gnarly dude.
Yeah. Okay, let's see. Quick little background on this little thing. Warp Graphics was an independent publisher a long time ago. And as I was saying in the pre-show, which, you know, you guys didn't hear, Image is apparently publishing this now, and apparently the Volume 2 of the collection of issues is coming out not too long after this will hit the web. So anyway, real quick off of Wikipedia. The Distant Soil is an epic space opera comic book series combining science fiction and fantasy with Arthurian themes. Written and illustrated by Colleen Duran.
I think it's Duran.
Is one of the works for which she is best known. The story, which Duran created at the age of 12, centers on a young girl who was born heir to an alien religious dynasty and explores issues of politics, gender identity, and tolerance. A Distant Soil is among the first U.S. graphic novels created solely by a female writer-artist, appearing in fanzines when the artist was still in high school. It was unique in comics at the time of publication for its New Age themes, crystal technology, and space opera setting. The Distant Soul is also notable for being among the earliest comics to feature openly gay characters, predating Marvel's North Star, and for featuring a gay couple as romantic leads. The series gained a Galactic Spectrum Award nomination for the Best Other Work in 2001. And it gives a little bit about the characters and such, and so on and so forth. Started off with Warp Graphics. She pulled it for a while due to rights issues. Looks like there was two volumes that came out by the Dawning Company. It had issues 1 through 4, and then Volume 2 had 5 through 9. An Image, there was another series, had 4 volumes back in the 1999 through 2006, and then there are digitally restored editions that were out last year, and that's the next volume that's coming out here in a couple of days. Well, depending on when you listen to this, of course. So,
I think it's interesting to note that Richard Pinney worked on the script.
Yeah, that's what he has it on there is. Yeah, that he did the script and editing, and that, I think that's part of the thing. And in doing the reading up on her, they were talking about it in her entry, and it says it was published in fanzine in 79, scattered by the Dawning Company Starblaze imprint force, contracted by Warp Graphics. Duran left the company after 9 issues due to an acrimonious dispute with Warp. They attempted to claim copyright and trademark on her work. The Warp version of the story has never been reprinted, despite its unusual all-pencil style and Duran's ownership of the publishing rights. She reprinted one short story in the Image Comic edition of the series that appeared in a Warp anthology. According to this, she discarded 300 pages of published work and rewrote and redrew the entire story from scratch.
Which is really interesting. I mean, it reminds me, this dispute that we're, I mean, we'll get to the issue in just a minute here, mm-hmm. I promise. It just reminds me of the dispute that we saw, maybe it was about a year ago, maybe a year and a half ago, mm-hmm. Walking Dead, when Tony...
Moore.
Tony mm-hmm. Moore was, you know, he did the first five issues of Walking Dead, so he obviously claimed was in the dispute with Kirkman over part ownership of, or at least some money mm-hmm. for the Walking Dead. And
yeah, which I thought was interesting, since he, from day one, had him credited in the show. So apparently he wasn't getting enough money.
Well, and so, and you know, to Richard and Wendy Pinney's credit, they gave a shot. They actually published one of my favorite comics at the time, which was Myth Adventures, which was based on the Robert Asprin series. I don't know what ever happened with that, but the idea that they would reach out and try and get claim the rights to this is interesting, given how they are pioneers with the AlphaQuest stuff. So, mm-hmm. Anyhow, I'm just, you know, they can have both the Pinnies and Colleen Grant are front runners of the whole black and white. And Murray, when you sent that email out, or the IM via Facebook, this is so he's black and white. Oh my God, I finally read it. It's like, this is just between the art and the lettering alone, this is so 80s.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I mean, I've read some Cerebus, and this is on that same...
Oh, God.
Pushing the boundaries level.
I don't think No, I was just saying, that's what the two volumes of Cerebus, or the three volumes of Cerebus I had, that were destroyed in the Great Flood of 2013, that will be ones that I probably will not replace for quite a while. I could not make it through the first volume. But anyway.
Oh, see, the first volume of Cerebus is so different than
the ones that any come after.
Of the other volumes. Yeah. Yeah, like, it's... I'm trying to think how much the phone book... It's, like, maybe the first 20 issues, 25, but it's...
Yeah.
It's really him finding his voice and his feet, because after that the story takes mm-hmm. such a turn. Like,
yeah. I think Paul had said the same thing.
Yeah, Paul, the later volumes are nothing at all like the your volumes.
And I might try it later on. It's like, just from the guys on the Legion podcast deal talking about the First World omnibuses that they put out, I got one off eBay for like $30 the other day. So I've never been a real big fan of his, well, somewhat of his art, but I've always wanted to read that stuff. So,
yeah, and I didn't want to go up on too much of a tangent. I just wanted to
to
totally echo what you said on Facebook, Murray, which is that this book, A Distant Soil, there were clearly, I mean, you know, if we reach back and we pull out a bunch of these black and whites from that period, there is a vibe that exists very unique vibe.
Yeah. I would be interested in seeing how this issue is different from
the redone series.
The issue, yeah, that she did completely on her own after she.
Mm-hmm. I would too.
It would be interesting. Well, I'll have to dig it up. I want to do a little more reading on the. I think in the wiki article it lists like the Comics Journal and stuff, so I want to see if I can find some of those old articles that probably detailed the battle between the two, and it's interesting. Like, I find that sort of comic history interesting, because you would expect the independents to all be of like mind and supporting one another and helping one another and there are times when it just doesn't work out that way.
Well, and ultimately, I mean, there came a point, and I would imagine it's probably not, you know, she was doing three issues a year, so you figured nine issues, so it's 3 years in, so we're heading mid-80s when licensing, in terms of going with Hollywood, was really starting to see potential, because that's when Batman was first being talked about.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, so, yeah.
Which, it wouldn't surprise me if they're like, you know what? We just got $1 million offer from Warner Brothers, and yeah. You wouldn't even be talking to Warner Brothers if it wasn't for us. And
well, I'd even.
And they're all starving. I mean, you got to imagine that putting on a black and white comic in the mid '80s was not a lucrative.
No. And I was scanning through the thing here on the series' publishing history. It says it spawned trading cards, fanzines, pinup books, limited editions, prints and posters, a fan club, and its creator has appeared in numerous documentaries and interviews. Also was optioned for film and television with interest from Energy Entertainment and David Olson. But
no clue who that is.
I have no idea. But yeah, it even says she started reprinting it in 96, but it went on a hiatus from 2006 to 2013 after the printer lost the archives of the photographic negatives of the graphic novels. The series returned in 2013, the first digitally restored edition premiering in July 2013. Chatelaine imprint book of the restored editions. It took on the restored editions and redesign tasks. Graphic artist Donald Havey completed the majority of restoration work. So, yeah. I'm shocked how timely this ends up being. Because, like, when you said A Distant Soil, it's like, oh, that sounds familiar. And I never actually read any of this. So,
I hadn't either. And this is actually the time just prior to when I started working in a couple of retail comic book stores. So. I don't know. I was very much into the Image stuff. That was when McFarlane and company
right.
was working at Marvel and doing their thing. So,
mm-hmm.
Anyhow, again, I didn't mean to tangent too much, but it's important. I mean, because it is a, you know, in the history of comic books, I do not think that her name will be missed when it's talked about, especially as a solid female creator.
Yeah, which I had no idea.
So,
this was so influential, but apparently, according to the wiki, anyway. Apparently, she also it talks about things she's doing. She lectures widely in venues such as the Smithsonian in D.C., the Singapore Writers Festival, Comics Masterclass in Sydney, Australia, and the Maryland Institute of College Art. And it goes on a bunch of other stuff she's done. The character Thalassi in Neil Gaiman's Sandman is based on Duran.
Oh,
which character?
Thessaly.
Oh,
Thessaly. Yeah, Thessaly. Thessaly. Which I've never read Sandman, so I have no idea who the hell it is. So.
Bring my brain to bear and remind myself who Thessaly was, but I know that she did appear in a couple of stories.
Yeah, I guess the 1996 Image Comics redo, it was in a 1,000-page long-form comics narrative. It sold more than 700,000 copies. That's where the production archives were destroyed with that. Wow, that would suck.
Yes.
Anyway, so yeah, this is a lot more important comic than I realized. Okay.
We're getting historical here. We're getting all into the face of history.
Yeah, man.
Well, now we'll actually get into it, and it's a wordy book. So we'll.
Oh, good lord! It makes Sovereign Seven look like I don't know. It's a lot more words even than that. I did not think that was possible.
We'll pray-see it as we go, but
yes, you'll have to. We'll be here all night.
Oh, yeah, and it kind of starts.
Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. What?
I was just gonna say, Thessaly was that really sexy one with the glasses. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah. Okay. Which she has glasses, apparently.
All right.
Yeah.
She's
not that much older than us, anyway.
In the middle of the action, I guess, there are these two characters that appear in a big blinding flash of light, and I think it's that flash of light that knocks out a whole bunch of different characters. So
yeah.
this issue is the issue that kind of pulls a bunch of characters together and sets them on their their course for the next couple of issues, I guess. But so the two, I guess they're the main characters at this point in this issue. Probably they're the if not the main, they're the point of view characters anyway. So their big explosion of light kind of knocks everyone out and lets them go from there. So we've got like a big long haired dude with white hair whose name is,
it's so long it's almost a cloak.
It really is. I think he's Riken, the guy with the long hair.
That's right.
Sure.
And then there's like Demur, who's I guess a guy, although it took me like, see, this is the problem I have with Colleen Doran's art. Everyone looks girly.
I have to agree with that.
I mean, to her credit, she's got her own style, and her style hasn't changed. Like, she's refined it and stuff over the years, but she's kept pretty true to her, you know, original style, her original look or whatever. It's not a look I would seek out or whatever. Like, it's not for me. But.
Well, I tend to agree with you. Some of it I wasn't fond of, but there were a few panels that were just really striking.
Yeah, like I had never seen any of her earlier work. So I'm only going on, up until this point, I was only going on the stuff that I'd seen on Valor and Legion and some of the stuff she'd done for DC, and I was never a big fan of her work, but I mean, lots of people are, and
yeah,
good for them.
That's what's anyway, great. So, that's what's great about comics, though. There's something for everybody.
And this would probably look great in pencil, like I don't know that it translates well into the comic because there's so much line work and shading and cross-hatching going on that sometimes things get a little muddy, but that could be, I mean, it's the 80s, right? So that could be just the way the page is reproduced or whatever, but
yeah.
Anyway.
Was it oversized slightly, like Cerebus was in ElfQuest, I wonder?
That I do not know.
I don't think so, okay. But I'm not sure.
Right.
Yeah, shrinking it would make it even harder to see for sure.
Anyway, as I'm looking at it right now, which is in each, it's slightly shrunken.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, I know. I had to kind of expand each panel a little bit. Anyway, these two dudes, they're in a, looks like a back alley, and there's lots of unconscious people around them. Some are human looking, some are not. But they start, they're talking, they're looking for a collection of people, I guess.
Holy crap, I didn't know that. This is on Comixology, the first volume.
Oh, yeah? Oh,
yeah, I just found it.
See if it's
$16.99, but it is on there.
There you go. You can check it out and see how different it is.
Yeah.
So Demur and Riken are, they're looking for a couple of people. They want to make sure none of these people they've knocked out are hurt too badly. But they're looking around, and this girl who is on the ground, Liana, she's one of the ones that had been knocked out, although she's really just faking it right now. She's pretending to be knocked out. Her and her brother, Jason, were living in an institute. I guess they were orphans or something. And they were trying to escape from the institute because, I mean, who wants to live in an institute? Nobody.
Just doesn't sound right at all, does it?
No. So they're trying to escape from the institute, and they were being followed and shot at by, well, it doesn't look like bullets. It looks like gas and weird mist and stuff that. Anyway, Liana and Jason get kind of knocked out and separated. And during, I guess they all kind of make their way to this back alley where this gang of toughs finds Liana and they act threatening towards her. I don't know that they ever planned to do anything. I mean, maybe they did. Who knows? But they act threatening, and she gets nervous, I guess. And at the same time, there's a collection of alien creatures that are also hunting Leanna and her brother. So
it's
we've
the
got,
Omega Man.
It's kind of like the Omega Man, totally.
Yeah.
So we've got Leanna and Jason, we've got this gang of toughs, and we've got this intergalactic gang of something. They're all in this back alley. They all want to grab her, and that's when the light appears. So we just kind of did this big flashback and got to see why everyone was in this alley. And now we kind of know the players for this first issue. And Leanna... You really do this. I had to read these first pages a couple of times just to kind of get everything clear in my head. It's not a book you need to read, like, at night when you're sleepy.
Yeah.
You need all your faculties going on.
I looked at the preview pages for the first issue of the redone stuff. They start earlier with the two characters actually at the Institute before...
Before the
attack. So you kind of fills it out a little bit more.
And that's probably not a bad... That's probably not a bad choice to make if Leanna is going to be the main character, and I'm thinking she is.
Yeah.
You maybe want to... I can see why she went back and, given the opportunity, changed it so that we had a chance to get to know Leanna a little bit before everything blows up and stuff.
Yeah.
So
this part doesn't happen until issue 2 in the newer version.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Huh. That's kind of cool. Alrighty, so she's in this alley. She's pretending to be knocked out. She notices that there's a gun on the ground, and I think she knows that she's got these powers.
Yeah, she had...
I don't think this is the first time she's used them, so she...
When she was doing the flashback, she's talking how she tried to get a bunch of dust and crap together to keep those people off, but her power failed, so...
Right, so she's... It's kind of telekinetic or something. She has the gun kind of sneak across the ground and float into her hand, and once she has the gun, she trains it right on Deemer and Riken, and she's holding the gun on
Brian
him.
Brian Deemer? No, sorry. Wrong Deemer.
Deemer? I don't know.
That's close enough.
She's holding the gun on them, and she's like, I don't know what you are, I don't know who you are, but I'm going to shoot this thing if you don't stay away from me. And
I'm sorry, but that's the most poorly drawn gun I think I've ever seen.
It's a really skinny gun.
Yeah. I don't know. It's weird looking.
An alien gun.
Yeah, it is an alien gun. Okay, never mind.
There you go.
I couldn't draw better, so I guess I shouldn't say anything.
Demur is kind of petrified and is hiding in the background, but Riken just says, it's okay. We totally get why she's frightened. Weird things are going on. We'll talk to her and we'll make it all work out. And he kind of explains to her that we get that you've got these energies and you don't really know how they're working, and if you're not careful, something's going to go wrong. And that's when he realizes that she's someone important. Mm-hmm. He realizes that she kind of knows that that she's important. So there's this little... They kind of realize that they're connected, but they don't really know, I don't think, at this point, how they're connected. And then they do some sort of
mind meld thing. Yeah, they're at the bottom, those three panels kind of together in that one panel where the facial expressions, that was probably my favorite part of it so far was that looks real. I mean, really detailed.
Yeah, it's actually those three panels are very they're very nice.
And it's like the light is dawning on her.
Yeah, it's like the shades of darkness go away as she... It's very subtle, but at the same time...
Not subtle?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that And that was the next panel is the first time I really realized that that was a guy and not a girl. It goes along with what you said.
Yeah, it's... Yeah. there are many characters in here where I have to be like, I'm
Which,
pretty sure that's
that
a dude.
Might be kind of considering what it said about the first, you know, openly gay thing. That might be, she might be subconsciously doing that on purpose.
Now that's how she draws. That's how she draws.
That, yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of, I mean, eventually, I guess the characters on the outer space world are meant to be kind of androgynous, which is
yeah, that's right. Fine. In the description, but, Rykin was saying that. So yeah, you're right. Okay, go ahead.
Which is like, so if that were a choice you were making just for this series, then I would get it. But it doesn't explain to me why Valor looks like a girl and Element Lad looks like a girl. And
you know, like, I remember reading
her characters all just have this.
I remember reading those and not really,
really look.
I remember those two issues that you're talking about when she did that, and I didn't realize who she was or that even a woman was doing it. But I remember thinking, boy, that's real feminine looking at the time, and now I know why.
Yeah, it's. I mean, it's her style, and she's kept it. Anyway, so getting back into the story, she does this kind of mind meld, and her and Rykin kind of share some memories, and I guess part of the memories are she sees her brother in trouble in some sort of laboratory.
Mm-hmm. It's a very Mike Grillish panel there.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah. She doesn't quite get what she's seeing, but she gets that these characters that she's in front of are pretty powerful and that a gun isn't really going to help, so she just kind of drops it and says, you know, go ahead, I won't bite, tell your nervous friend to stop worrying, and they decide that it would be best if they just kind of collect the people they need to collect and find a comfortable place to talk, so they show up at a police officer's home who I don't think was in.
Yeah, see, that, I look, because the preview pages on Comixology for that first issue show the altercation in more detail, and that sergeant she was talking to, you know, he kind of chased them away right before those two showed up.
So right,
I guess what they're not, they didn't show it very well in this one.
No, they didn't show it at all.
Yeah,
no,
at all.
It takes a little while. It takes till like the end of the page before you realize that the officer had his keys pickpocketed by one of the guys in the gang. So obviously he had to have been there and had to have been knocked out by the big light, or he wouldn't have been able to have his pocket picked or whatever. But it's not a real. It's you have to do a little bit of guesswork there. Anyway, yeah. It's police officer Sergeant Antonio Minetti, and that's where they end up. They end up back at his apartment, and he is a single dad, and he's got a little son who shows up for a little bit in the story, and he's kind of the gruff, I can't believe this is happening to me, none of this seems real, but I'm stuck with it, so we're just going to roll with it kind of character.
Harvey Bullock or yeah.
Yeah.
Or even James Gordon. It's like, you know what? You're gonna be a cop, just gotta deal with it.
That's right. He's all bark and bluster, and he's probably got a good heart way underneath there. So we've got at his apartment, we've got Leanna and Demur and Rykin and this kid from the gang, and only the one kid from the gang. The rest of the gang, I guess, is gone. And this kid, I've forgotten his name.
Donowitz,
yeah.
Uh-huh.
Who, by the way, apparently Hawaiian and Jewish.
Yeah, he's got quite the heritage going on there. And they've all got...
It's Bruno Mars.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
And they've all got this big feathered 80s hair. Like, yeah, they are all wearing the Farrah Fawcett.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they are.
Okay. Except for Riken, who's got the long hair.
Yeah, the Crystal Gale look.
Yeah, totally. Alrighty, so we spend some panels where he's all grumpy, and they kind of introduce themselves, and he's wondering why they're all in his apartment, and why half of them are wearing his clothes, because they got to blend in. So.
Yeah, they're going to blend in.
They're going to blend in so well with hair down to their feet, and who knows. Anyway, so they are getting caught up in figuring out who's what and why they're there. And he's thinking he's got to call someone. He figures, this is all just too crazy. I gotta make a phone call. And before he can do that, one of the aliens, like, stops him from making a phone call. And there's some, like, light going on from his hands. And he realizes, all right, I guess I'm not making a phone call right now. Let me see. There's a little bit of talk about how Demur and Riken aren't from Earth. They're from, you know, some other planet, and they're here because there's some big danger to the Earth that is coming, and they all need to kind of work together to protect the Earth, save the Earth, save all of humanity. You know, the typical, the usual. Earth is on the threshold of an invasion, and Leanna realizes that that's not quite, she guesses that that's not the whole story, and he's kind of whispering that to Riken.
Yeah.
But they both just kind of let it slide for now. Let me see.
Interject real quickly. If you look, and again, I did not go off on a tangent, but the lettering, the dialogue bubbles, I having done lettering for a comic back not too much after this time, maybe in the mid-90s, totally, you can see, you know, it's very immature-ish. This stuff is not set very well, but it is very, if you look at those 80s comics, they all have that, at least the independent ones, excuse me.
Yeah.
Have that same.
Somebody, let's see. So, this came out in 83, so how old was she then? Let me see here. Go ahead.
I would guess still under 20.
I think so, yeah. She was born in 64. Yeah, she was 19.
Yeah. There you go. Alrighty. So they go to check on the characters that they left in the alley. And at the moment, they're still kind of knocked out. And Riken says, I can't lie to you. I need your assistance in this time of danger. Your world is truly under the shadow of an invasion from a far distant star. And Panetti, the officer, says, okay, before we're going to say anything else, I need a beer. I need to sit down. I need to relax. I need a beer. So he goes to get the beer. And that's when we meet his son.
Which apparently shares beer with him, which I thought was interesting.
He shares his taste for beer. So the little guy comes out because of all the noise. You know, you've got all these people jibber-jabbering, and the kid decides he'd like some beer, and the officer says, well, you know, tomorrow. You can have it tomorrow. And
yeah. And you already had some before you went to bed. I'm like, what?
That's right. Well, you know, you got to put them down. Let them sleep.
That's one way to do it. I never thought of that.
Single dad, he's the mother and the father.
Yeah.
He's got it rough.
Yeah.
So he sends the kid off to bed, but not before the kid looks at some of the new people in the apartment and decides that they're Star Wars aliens. And some of the fun, like, I do like the little thought bubbles that are going on in some of the characters and how they're, even if they're printed kind of clumsily or the speech is a little stilted, you get what they're going for. Like, you get that there's this sort of sarcastic humor bubbling under the surface there, which is cool. Like, yes, he sends the kids off to bed, that's when they finally start to get into the story of these aliens. So this gets pretty confusing to my poor little head, but
no, yeah, I agree. I had to read it pretty slow.
Basically, there's like a planet that all these aliens lived on, and then they had to move to a second planet when the sun got old. It scorched their original world, because as it got older, it kind of got hotter, or
it expanded
or something. So they moved to a different world, and then as their sun cooled off again, their planet got cooler, but they lived with it. So they're living on this kind of icy crystal world, and they're all very, I would guess, kind of spiritual, and they're all,
yeah,
they it says they're they learn to conserve their energies, to cultivate expressions of the spirit, art, music, philosophy. All those internal sort of things became their pursuits. So they're kind of an arty, new agey planet. And they found that as they became more spiritual, they had less, they kind of turned away from any sort of physical work, so they needed people to do the physical tasks that they no longer felt were, they felt that they were beyond those sort of physical tasks.
They weren't going to wash their own damn dishes anymore.
Yeah.
That's right.
Well, basically, they're alien Republicans.
Oh!
Ouch. So, they would conquer other worlds and other races, and then the people that they conquered would then become the servant race, or the servant class of their world. And Riken wanted to make it clear that they weren't the one, they don't kill.
Yeah, no,
they're
we
not
hire
the
people
that
to
do the
that
killing. That's
yeah.
Right. They just do the hiring. So
yeah, that's okay then.
It's okay, because we don't get our hands dirty.
We don't do that. We just pay people to do that for us.
That's right. We let other people do that. And we learn a little bit about their political hierarchy, I guess. So there's like this avatar that rules everybody. And the avatar, I guess, kind of judges all of the children. So...
Yeah.
As people are born, the avatar kind of says, this is a good person, this is a person who's not so good.
Well, what they're saying is that their powers are going to be quote-unquote good, or they're going to be quote-unquote bad.
Yeah.
Right.
Threaten the hierarchy.
Well, yes. But, I mean, the people don't really know. I mean, yes, they're keeping the people alive that aren't going to threaten the hierarchy, and they're getting rid of the kids that could potentially become threats to their rule, but the people
sounded
don't
more
know.
And more familiar all the time.
The people are only supposed to know that the kids that they are eliminating are dangers to society, because their powers are potentially not helpful or whatever. So,
right.
So, that's kind of I mean, it's a neat kind of world to think of, like, in terms of world building and stuff, cool. I mean, I certainly wouldn't want to live there, of course, but it's a neat, like, you can totally see how she can take that world and craft a ton of stories from that sort of starting point.
Mm-hmm. It's an interesting concept.
Yes. So I think there's a couple of pages where they kind of explain that, and then we get more into, I think, whose story?
How the hierarchy was threatened.
Yeah, I guess the hierarchy is threatened, and they I think this part that they're talking about now becomes a little more important in later issues. So they're kind of introducing some characters who will become more important. I don't think they have a huge chunk in this particular story, but you see that this character, Haran, or Haran's world, was conquered, and Haran is this character that serves the masters, but of course hates serving them, and
looks like an Okaran too, doesn't it?
He kind of does, yeah. He looks like that Omega Men race.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. We're back to the Omega Men.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's very reminiscent of it, actually, because the Avatar could be Exhale.
Yeah, totally. So it sounds like Haran has escaped from the Masters and has...
he found his freedom because he got killed by the bodyguard.
Oh, there you go. Well, some sort of freedom.
Yeah, his freedom is... Yeah, he's just like, okay, I'm going to attack the Avatar. There's my chance. His freedom is at hand. Haran has found his freedom, but it's not what he sought. Was it another... Basically a collaborator is what they're saying. The bodyguard killed him. So that's how he found his freedom.
So, okay. So they're really just kind of setting up the idea that the Avatar is facing more and more threats, I guess, as the years mm-hmm. go on.
Yeah.
The Avatar is still alive, but...
Yeah, then you get one that comes into power that doesn't like killing children and lets some of them that are quote-unquote negative slide through. And then that's when you get this one that they're starting with. It's a long way to come to where we're...
Oh, yeah, yeah. See? Oh, it's good someone else read this, too.
Yeah. See, so you get this one, it's a crystal cutter that's really good at messing with the crystals.
Right.
And he comes to the main city, sees one of the slaves getting punished. He steps in the way, tries to buy his way out of it, causes a bunch of crap. And he ends up killing one of the elite.
Right.
So that causes a culling, for lack of a better term, of some of the negative talents that were let slip. Meanwhile, he crash lands on Earth.
That's right. So one of the characters with the negative powers that the kindly Avatar let live escapes to Earth and...
Yeah. Yes.
Marries,
mm-hmm.
has five kids, but only two of those children are alive today. And, of course, those two children are Liana and her brother Jason. So they are, even though they were born on Earth, they are now connected to this alien race
mm-hmm.
with the Avatars. And we learn that Liana is actually like an Avatar, like she's the...
Yeah.
The,
she's on the same wavelength.
Yeah, they kind of explain it so that if there can only really be one Avatar at a time. If there's two Avatars, their powers kind of interfere with each other, like radio static. So if you have mm-hmm. like two radios tuned to different stations at the same time and they're too close, they just kind of crackle and you can't hear anything. It's kind of like the same way with the Avatars. If there's two Avatars alive... their powers kind of
interfere with each other.
Don't work to full potential, and they interfere with each other, and so they are. That's one of the reasons that people are searching for Lyanna.
Yes.
They want to
insult to the hierarchy.
That's right. They want to get rid of her so that the Avatar's power isn't diluted or all that stuff.
It hurts. My brain hurts.
So basically, the Death Star's in orbit right now. Ready to wipe the planet out if they can't find her through normal means. So, yeah, that's what they're there for.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, there's this big fleet of aliens kind of floating up above the Earth, just waiting. Mm-hmm. Waiting. Waiting to see what the next move is going to be, right? And they've decided Lyanna has to be destroyed.
Right. And
they got Warworld up there.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, so you know they can't attack the place with a big bunch of people. A small band of renegades would be a lot better. An elite force, and this is who she's picked. Maybe she didn't say elite, but still.
Yeah.
It's not they she. Just, excuse me.
It's so hyper big that the smaller the invasion group, the better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they said, oh, they wouldn't just come attacking us. They would pretend to be human and slip in, or they would say, hey, we're buddies. They do the V thing, the V style of invasion. We're your buddies.
That's right.
And then one day, boom, they turn on you and leave the world a husk and then blow it up.
Yeah, because, I mean, not only do they want to get Lyanna, but here's another world that's available for them to, harvest and take. And and since the opportunity is there, why not use it?
Exactly.
All righty. So they all, after all this, they all just kind of decide that they're gonna be a group. They're going to band together. They each have their own kind of little role. So the Minetti is responsible for the enforcement of law on his world. So if he doesn't help Riken and his band, then he's going to be opposing the alien invaders, and of course they're not going to take too kindly to that. Mm-hmm. And the kid in the gang is, of course, a troublemaker, and that the hierarchy just doesn't even, they're not going to have any moment for troublemakers, and like the dude is just so little, they're not even going to they'll take no notice of him except that they'll crush him. Mm-hmm. So he is better off to join them.
Yeah.
Bessie's all funky colored.
Yeah.
That's the color of Hawaii, I guess.
I guess.
Yeah, and apparently the brother has been taken captive, I believe.
Yes, Jason has been captured.
He's on...
Jason of Star Command.
He's on Warworld/Death Star right now.
That's right. And eventually, after they've decided they're all going to work together, we do a little scene change. We go up into space to the alien invaders, and we meet Jason, who's now kind of waking up.
Gave him some drugs.
Yes.
The transitions in this book are a little rough.
Yeah, they are.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
So some of the hierarchy come to visit, and he has no idea what's going on, and he breaks some protocol, and
he dares to touch one of the rulers, and
they're very afraid of them, though.
I know that reaction was kind of awesome.
I thought it would be more, how dare you touch me, but no, he's gonna kill me.
he just kind of grabs their wrist as if to say, hello, or what's going on, and they are just freaking out that
he's still a little groggy, so he's not thinking very well too. So,
Well, and I mean, he doesn't know, right? Like, he has no idea that touching an alien lady would be akin to a murder attempt.
Does he not watch Doctor Who, for God's sake?
Apparently not. It's not in syndication back in the 83, I think. So.
Oh, okay.
Well, and even if it was, it probably wasn't playing at the Institute.
No, you're correct, yes.
I mean, the Institute wouldn't be playing PBS.
No.
Really, that's the only place you would see Doctor Who in the States in the 80s.
Yeah, you're right.
Like, NBC was not shooting Doctor Who on on Thursday nights.
Let me see. 80s, NBC, so we got Cosby.
Yeah.
Cheers.
Yeah. Family Ties? Was that still Thursday night?
Family Ties was Thursday night, yes.
Yes. See, I would ignore Cosby, watch Family Ties, watch Cheers, watch Night Court. Yeah.
It's also the time of, like, Knight Rider and a couple others. Oh. Milk.
Yeah. Alrighty. So as we kind of get to the end of the issue there, we close off with Riken and Leanna, and she comes up to him and says, "You and I better have a talk." And he's like, "Oh, I wasn't even aware you were there. I thought you turned in with the others." And she's like, "You have lied to them just about every step of the way. You need to tell me why." And he just says, "Well, I wasn't really lying. I just didn't tell all the truth." And I didn't quite put everything in the right context.
Yeah,
and she's like, "Yeah, that's lame, dude. You're lying."
Yeah. Dude, that's just not cool.
That's right. And he's like, "What does it matter? At the end of all this, you're going to get your brother back. And how do you even care how we get there?" You know, like, and that's the only, and then after he has that moment of crankiness, he's like automatically back to the kind sort of new agey dude. "Oh, yeah. I'm so sorry. Do you think they would trust me if I told them the truth?"
I think he's definitely faking big time.
Yeah, and she's like, "It doesn't matter because I don't trust you at all." And she just walks out, and that's kind of the end of the first issue there.
One thing I thought that was interesting about this was, we talk about Geoff Johns writing Aquaman, and those first 10 issues were the best 3 issues of a series ever.
Right.
And you say nothing happened. I know you, Caleb, you like to say that. Yeah. Nothing happened in this book at all, really. Not only was there a lot of talking, there's pictures of people sitting and talking.
We've got a ton of backstory, though.
Well, like, yeah, but they're literally sitting around drinking beer and talking for most of the issue.
And that's different than what we're doing right now?
I don't know. It just strikes me odd for some reason. And from what I'm looking at, they got 3-page previews on Comixology of the redone series. This one issue was done in 3. In the newer one.
Huh. And I guess I could see it. Like, it...
Because it is kind of compressed here, so...
There's places where you could... I don't know. I'm really inclined to take a look at it, because I want to see... Mm-hmm. After we talked through it...
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like,
there's... Well, no, I admit, I'm interested. Just because, I like that kind of stuff, but...
I'd be curious to see where it goes from here, because this was very much a setup issue. Like, they had a lot to set up, and
it holds up well, I think.
Yeah,
except for the hairdos. But.
Oh yeah, yes. But I'd be interested to see how the same story is told once she gets it back and all the words are hers, right? Like this. This is her story as told through Richard Pini's words. So I would be curious to see how she changes the story chooses to tell it, given that she has the luxury of coming back to the story like a couple of years later, right? So she can go back and see how her Isla's changed and how her writing has changed and just matured, right? So she can, this is kind of like a first draft that got published.
Yeah.
Not that she did at the time, but.
Yeah, exactly. Interesting.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, I was wrong. Cosby was not on in 83.
Oh, so. But 18 was.
Really? Sorry. Well, what was on then?
Well, let me see. Thursday night on NBC, we had Gimme a Break.
Oh, jeez.
Gimme a Break.
Break, and that was then followed for the first half of the season by Mama's Family, which was then replaced by
Mama's Family.
Family Ties.
Yeah.
And We Got It Made. And then we had Cheers, which was filled with Buffalo Bill.
Yeah.
And That's Incredible was still on.
That's Incredible? Oh, God, I'd forgotten about this show.
And Magnum was on.
Yes, it was. I saw that on that little link you sent.
Followed by Simon and Simon.
V, the TV series. Or was that the miniseries? No, it was a TV movie.
So, this was an interesting book. And I allowed myself to be distracted by shiny objects there at the end. But, there is a lot of words in here, and I admit, I read it in two parts, which probably did not serve me well, because it was easy to lose track. And given the fact that everybody in the book looks like a chick.
Yeah. No, I agree with you on that.
Which made it even more confusing at some points. So... I guess it made it confusing. Maybe it didn't, but I got to give her props. It is definitely at the time thinking about what DC and Marvel were publishing. This was out there.
Yeah.
What were DC and Marvel publishing in '83?
No idea.
Just before Crisis, Superman hadn't been rebooted yet. Legion was just starting with Giffen.
And nine chances out of ten, it was canceled at the time.
83 would be like 2 or 3 years into New Teen Titans at this point.
Yeah, that's true.
We had the preview of Amethyst was published in Legion of that year.
Oh, really? Wow.
Jason Todd made his debut in 83. Let me see. Oh, shnikey. In June of that year, Legion 300.
Oh, yeah. Really?
Ronin was coming out that year.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I was right. Batman and the Outsiders was about to be started up here.
Flash was probably on trial.
The Magic miniseries from Marvel started later that year.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Official Handbook of the Marvel Universe was a number 6 at that time.
We had Elementals was coming out.
Oh, yeah.
But that was Marvel or DC. Apologies.
Nope. That's all right.
Mirage Studios was being formed with Eastman and Laird. And we had stuff like American Flag, John Sable, and a couple others like that. And 83 was the year that DC purchased Charlton.
Oh.
Okay. In time for Crisis.
All right, sorry, off on a tangent, but I
no, like, that's cool.
That's what Marvel and DC were doing. They were recognizing a tide turn, but they couldn't keep up. So it wasn't happening for them for a couple more years. Camelot 3000 wasn't out yet. Dark Knight wasn't out yet. Watchmen definitely wasn't out yet. Daredevil, Frank Miller's Daredevil hadn't been published yet. I'm certain in '83, I think. Claremont and Byrne were still on X-Men at that point.
Oh, so, the first issue of John Sable Freelance was out.
There you go.
When this came out.
Anyhow, so it was definitely her contribution will not be ignored. She would not be ignored.
No, I would say not. New Mutants number 4.
Ooh. We are timely, if nothing.
Yeah. I just think it's weird that we picked this and then the next volume of it comes out in like 2 or 3 days. That's just real weird.
Well, make sure this publishes on Monday, then.
Oh, don't worry about that. It'll be out.
Okay.
I will make sure.
I enjoyed this. I think I actually did, too. A couple art questions aside and a couple of massive amounts of input.
Mm-hmm.
Aside, it was very well constructed, and there's a lot of depth to this book.
Yeah, I agree. Well, let's see. Well, gotta wrap it up. I got somebody waiting on me, so sorry, guys. I speed it up a little. So yeah. Anyway. No, I agree. This was interesting. I might seek out the newer versions to see what they're like and go from there. So, yeah, that's about it. Anything else?
Yep. Anything else from you, Murray, who did a valiant attempt at synopsizing this thing?
Yeah, that's some thick stuff, man.
Yeah, no, I liked it more as we went through it, for sure.
Yeah, I agree.
And now it's time to go hide Easter eggs.
All right, then.
God.
And then watch Orphan Black Season 2, Episode 1. Woo!
Oh, you know, they got that on Amazon Prime now. I'm going to have to watch the first season.
Yes. Well worth it.
I've heard. Two or three websites were just going on and on about how great it is. I'm going to have to get into it.
It's so good.
All right, I'll have to do that.
So good.
I mean, you know.
Now that it's free on Amazon.
Yes, absolutely. Well, I'd already procured, quote-unquote, I'm doing air quotes, about the first 4 or 5 episodes. I just hadn't got to them yet.
Well, get to them. There's like, oh my gosh, so much good stuff.
Oh, yeah, I'm looking forward to it. All right, as always, you can send us an email at podcast@talesfromalongbox.com and let us know what you think. Or you can check us out on our Facebook page. Just do a search for Tales from Long Box Podcast. You can find us there. And as always, you can comment on the actual episodes. And that is it for this week.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Good night.
And we are out.
Okay.